Ladies and gentlemen, these men and women who graduate today would have accomplished precious little, would never have reached this stage without the support of many people, without the good faith of their parents and grandparents, of their friends and families. Graduates, would you please join me in a rousing round of applause for all those who bore you up this day? Thank you all so much for entrusting us with the ones you love the most. Thank you for encouraging their minds to be flexible and open. Let me assure you that they are extraordinary, and I say this to every family member here, that these are extraordinary young people and that your undying and unflinching support of them has brought them to this day. Now, speaking of undying, as many of you may be aware, I woke up one morning in March to find myself dead. Religious and folkloric traditions the world round hold that sometimes it takes a while for the newly deceased to realize he is dead. So the fact that I had woken up that morning really was not good proof enough. My first inkling that all was not as it should be and that this was not an ordinary day, but in fact the day of my demise occurred when a tearful undergraduate in RAND ran up to me, flung her arms around my neck and cried, "Chancellor Gee, I am so sorry you are dead." When I turned, I saw the mock hustler on the stands. I realized what had happened, and that if I was not dead, I now had the hard task of proving it. Now, I've had to prove a lot of things in my time, but the fact that I was indeed alive had never been one of them. It was a heavier burden of proof than I had imagined. If I had thought that proving my continued existence would be easy, I was wrong. Dead wrong. Just kidding you. When I received this email from an undergraduate, I knew I had to take action. I have it right here. "Chancellor Gee, I'm so happy you're well and alive. Before I knew differently, though, I went back to my dorm room to put on my black dress. You should feel honored. I usually only ever wear it to Saturday afternoon football games." I posted a photograph that I hoped would do the trick. And then I sent out a note to the university populace attesting that I was indeed fogging up the mirror. But these efforts only provoked an email from a student with gothic propensities who noted that I had neglected to mention whether or not I was casting a reflection in the mirror, and that while I may not be dead, I may in fact be undead. She assured me that this was cool with her, but I was nevertheless disconcerted. What if I were dead or undead? My world started to unravel. I had the office of Owen. Of course, those business students up there, our business school, calling mine to suggest that given the current economic climate, it would be in the best taste in class for me to return the flyers they had already just sent. I had the divinity school wondering if I had set a new precedent for resurrection in fewer than 3 days, to which I could only reply, "Israel in 4 BC had no mass communications, and we have an efficient and speedy public affairs division." But that answer just sent them into another doctrinal tizzy. I received the following email from a mother in this audience today, and I thought, I don't mean to embarrass her, but I will read it. "Dear Chancellor Gee, my daughter, Vanderbilt Senior, telephoned me at 8:30 this morning to inform me of your death. As my husband and I are great fans of yours, we were quite distressed and saddened. I took my attentions to my Bible study group that afternoon and offered my prayers up for your family and for everyone at Vanderbilt. When I returned home, I was reassured of the power of prayer. It turned out you were fine. Glad I could be of help. I will let you take on faith whatever you want to believe, but if I have ever said that I never thought I would live to see this day, well, I was partially right. Our events today could be as much of a seance as a commencement, but my dead or undead or living heart swells with pride for you anyway on this day. What an amazing class Vanderbilt is letting go. What enormous and varied talent. Today we say goodbye to Chantel Anderson and Ashley McElhaney, two of the biggest cagers ever to play at Vanderbilt, who through their teamwork with one another inspired their whole team. Today we say goodbye to Jay Prather, editor-in-chief of Orbis, to Christine Yantis, who played a magnificently jaded Sally Bowles in Vanderbilt Off-Broadway's production of Cabaret, to Phil O'Hara, who finishes his PhD in religion with a significant and excellent dissertation on the economics of the kingdom in the Gospel of Mark after strokes and paralysis forced him to have to relearn how to write and to speak and to focus his eyes. We let go of them, of all of you, just as they and you release a grip from us. The Jewish mystic Nachman of Breslov said that the most important imperative for any individual is to give up what she is for what she might become. As you leave Vanderbilt, you are leaving behind a host of things, maybe a place to live that, although it appeared cramped at the time, now seems quite dear to you, a definite routine, a well-worn route about campus, a set of friends and identifications, a meal plan, complaining about the meal plan. But the shift from being a college student to not being a college student is even more than an exchange of trappings and surroundings and accessories for other trappings and surroundings and accessories. It can feel much deeper than that. You can feel yourself turning in an old identity, a whole identity, as though you were turning your bowling shoes or roller skates back into the rental desk, and with not a lot more ceremony. But when you go to fetch your regular shoes out of the cubbyhole, you find someone has stolen them. Graduation can feel like this. What are you going to wear home? Who are you now? A certain stocking-footed feeling pervades your consciousness. Nachman calls this moment of feeling the surrendering of what is within. You have to do it, whether you like it or not, and most of us do not. What is within is whatever is old and familiar that comforts you and continues to comfort you, even if it ceased to serve you a long time ago. It is your old shoes. And suddenly your life as a student can seem very sweet and easeful, even if just 4 months ago you were groaning and struggling with the most acute throes of senioritis. The certainty of that life can allure you in retrospect with its simplicity and safety. Even if you have thought every next hour of class an excruciating ordeal and wondered, how could I ever have endured sitting here listening to these people ramble on and on, suddenly you would like nothing more than to put up with all those people one last time. But we are called upon to surrender old habits if we ever want to reach what is beyond. As you can only reach for that which is beyond you if you're willing to take a leap into the abyss, if you're willing to walk out onto the curb in your stocking feet. You have to go forth. You have to find the walk that is your walk. You have to go to the new self who awaits you. As Abram did when he walked into the desert at God's Lekleka and became Abraham, as Prince Siddhartha did when he realized that his young life had been shielded from the truth and left his protected palace, everything he owned, and went to meditate beneath a tree to become Buddha. As Muhammad did when he kept solitary vigil night after night in the cave of Hira, trusting that a revelation would come to him. As Jesus' apostles did when their teacher told them to travel with neither bag nor belt, with nothing to which they could cling. As the Mormons who founded my tradition did when they walked out into the desert, walked out through that which they saw as an emptiness to a land that was waiting for them. You always, ladies and gentlemen, have to leave something behind. As many of you have heard by now, I am from Vernal, Utah, home of Dinosaur National Park and a Tasty Freeze, where the hippest characters in town have been extinct 70 million years. I often smile at the fact that I was 18 before I had met anyone who was not Mormon or Republican or a dinosaur. But I needed to leave behind what was familiar to me in order to meet all of the remarkable people I now know who are neither Mormon, nor Republican, nor dinosaurid. I needed to get lost a little in a completely unfamiliar world to find out what I was that was not all those things. That the world into which you reemerge holds an eerie similarity to the world as you left it 4 years ago may seem to offer some comfort. In 1999, when the undergraduate started school at Vanderbilt, Buffy had just graduated from high school. Now she is set to graduate the series. People were reading the third Harry Potter book, and now they are waiting for the fifth. You had spent the summer thrilling to The Matrix, and now you find that your college career has been bookended by matrices. In 1999, you wondered, what is this Google? And by now, I am sure Google has helped you out of many a stuck spot. The West Wing premiered, and Jed Bartlett is still president. Three Kings capitalized on our memory of the first Gulf War, and now we have a second to wonder how we will remember, how much is the same, how much was set into motion. and how much looks the same, although you know in your heart of hearts that it is not the same, not at all, and that the comfort you might take from its apparent familiarity is only an illusion. Ladies and gentlemen, as you can well imagine, this has been a difficult speech to compose because in the weeks leading up to this auspicious day, our news was changing every hour, and in truth, I did not know into what sort of world I would be delivering this speech. Finally, I had to write it, an urgency with which I know you're all too familiar from writing papers at the last minute. So after trolling around on Google for a while, growing more and more desperate, I realized that what I was feeling resembled to a small degree what you would be feeling. For how does one write a speech to be delivered into the world if one is uncertain how that world will look? And how do you plan for a future when that future could look like anything, when a cocksure overconfidence can be so easily foiled? What am I when what I think I am can change so easily from one moment to the next? Where am I when the world in which I live can seem to change in a matter of hours or months into one fraught with war and terror? An uneasy feeling arises when you realize that no one can glibly answer those questions for you. These are the moments that force you forth on your own. These are not moments of conversation, but moments of announcement in which you have to decide your own answer, in which you have to find your own way. There is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful word in Sanskrit that makes that announcement. That word is jay. So that all of you in the audience can picture the word, it is spelled in its transliteration J-A-I. Jay usually appears in prayers and devotions to mean something like hail or hallelujah. A friend of mine once told me that in addition to that use, jay is what you say when there is nothing else to say. For instance, when you see a glorious sunset and the sunset expands across the whole sky and across your heart, and the sunset has such colors in it that you think no one on this planet has ever seen those colors, because surely there is no way our sun's light can hold those colors. And if you started talking at that moment, 1,000 years would go by before you were able to describe that sunset. You just say jay, for that is what you say when all other words fail you. And conversely, when you lose your job and then all of a sudden your car breaks down and it is going to take $900 to fix which you simply do not have, and your student loans are due, which is going to start coming true sooner than you think for some of you, what else could you possibly say? When you are watching a war on television and you are trying to figure out how you feel about it because you hear so many reports about it that are conflicting, and you know there is suffering, and you are trying to figure out if it is good, and all of the people you go to for counsel tell you they are no wiser than you are, you just say jay. You hit the bottom and you see what you come up with, what is left in your hands. You might be in a place right now that makes you feel that way, for all else has been stripped away and the world once so familiar to you has changed so utterly, and all that you have left is the core of your being, what is really you, that is not a car or a job or words or a world that is consistent or a schedule or a student number. So why in these moments would you ever say something that amounts to praise? Because in that spot of frustrating wildness is an opening for grace, the same as the sunset, an opening for going forth with what you have left, with what is really you, with what is really dear to you. The world is not as it was when you started college. Fortunes change, the world's fortunes change, and your fortunes will change. They will, I assure you, go up, and they may even go down, and life is long. So you are better off figuring out who you are now, at your core. Jay is that moment of going forth into that weird world of leaving your tent or your palace or your teacher or your cave or your dormitory or the land of the dinosaurs in Vernal. It is that moment of going forth into the world and into yourself, into which you have to ask, what else do I have if I do not have myself and the wisdom in my mind? What else do I have if I do not have a heart that has learned enough to be compassionate? What else do I have if I do not have my humanity? You realize that what your fortune is does not matter. When all else falls away, your core purpose is something that will remain, that will bear you up through every wild moment. Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest gift of an education is that it expands the sympathies of our imaginations so that we are able to know that each being in the world has a private heart as well. In that expansion, we become more able to see the price of violence. What you are at your core, your education, what you have made of yourself and what it has made of you, and your compassion and your wisdom, your heart and hand and mind, all of these things are what is truly you, and they enable you to work in every capacity for the mending of our rent world, for its healing and repair. You must sew up the tear that humans have made in the universe through their violence to each other on this earth. That skill is the core of your being. This art is the only thing worth having. The caring that you are capable of, that caring that is demonstrated by all of the people who love you most in the world, who came out, all of you here, to see you walk your walk today, that caring can be extended to everyone. We live in a round world. Do not close your hearts to anyone, because like you, they all have their own moments of jay. Please convert the knowledge that you have learned so dearly here into wisdom. Use it in service to beings everywhere to transform the world through your best work as scientists, as healers, as theologians, as writers, as activists. Let your whole life bring forth what you have learned, what is your core, until humans on earth can truly say that they know and understand one another. And in that caring and in that work and service, when all that you have learned here culminates in your brilliant minds and compassionate hearts, I wish that God speed you on your stocking feet. Thank you very much.